Hey, I'm just exercising my Second Amendment rights here, you fucking communist.
January the 28th, 2016. I am Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me. And tonight I'm drinking Woodford's Reserve, finishing off the bottle. Madman, what are you drinking?
Four Roses, not finishing off the bottle.
Static, what you got, man?
Mixture of Woodford's with Old Barton and a side of opiates.
That's a strange combination.
Why would you mix Woodford's like that?
Well, okay, let me rephrase. A glass of Woodford's and a glass of Old Barton's and the opiates. So, you know.
Okay.
So it's not mixing in the glass, it's mixing in you.
Yeah, exactly.
Good man.
I'm the worried, bartender then. And getting shook up, you know. Hey.
It had me worried, but there it's like I can't remember what the whiskey was now, but anyways, I knew a guy who wanted this $50 bottle of whiskey. I don't remember exactly what brand it was because I didn't pay for it. But he gets it. He puts, I don't know, maybe a finger in a Boston glass, and it just drowns it in Sprite. And everybody's like, no, what are you doing? What are you drinking?
I got a nice glass of Chateau de Challenger. It'll get you really high, but fuck, you'll explode at the end of the evening. Come on. 30th anniversary of the Challenger.
I was expecting you to say you had a glass of $50 bourbon with Sprite.
It's the 30th anniversary of the Challenger disaster today.
Ooh, it is.
I thought we were 30 years... It's long enough. We can make a joke now.
All right. So, I don't know. We were watching the debates. Kind of got boring and predictable there. Everybody's claiming to be the next Reagan.
In my safe space.
Well, yeah, they didn't have Trump up there, you know, beating up on them, so it kind of was a safe space, wasn't it?
Well, you had Cruz go on for 2.5 minutes. Now everyone's picking on me.
That's true.
I'm gonna leave if you don't stop.
I don't know. It was kind of funny, kind of stupid at the same time. I seriously think when we get to the actual presidential debates, wipe the audio from one of the live feeds and just sit here and make fun of them the whole time, live on the air.
Yeah.
Galaxy 15 presidential analysis.
I can see Trump and Bernie being fun.
Oh, any of them. We'll just, if they're politicians, we'll find something to make fun of.
I'm just going to spend the day photoshopping their heads on porn pictures.
Oh!
Oh, God.
Trump's face, Lucy Lawless's body.
I need more alcohol before I look at that.
I'm making Trump a Taiwanese ladyboy.
So, moving right on. Apparently, somebody wrote a computer program. I'm going to cover this for our discussion topic. Truthfully, I think it's kind of bullshit. But, apparently Google wrote an AI that can beat players at Go. So, we've had computers beat, they got the list here of chess, Scrabble, Othello, and Jeopardy. But apparently Go had never had a computer beat somebody. Earlier this month, the article's from Wired. Earlier this month, top AI experts outside of Google questioned whether a breakthrough could occur anytime soon, and as recently as last year, many believed that another decade would pass before a machine could beat the top humans. But Google has done just that. It happened faster than I thought, said Remy Calhoun, the French researcher behind what was previously the world's top artificially intelligent Go player. Researchers at DeepMind, a self-professed Apollo program for AI, that Google acquired in 2014 staged this machine versus man contest in October at the company's offices in London. The DeepMind system, dubbed AlphaGo, matched its artificial wits against Fan Hui, Europe's reigning Go champion. And the... You know, is that really a thing, to be like a reigning champion in a board game?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure, because I mean, it's like...
It's up there with speedrunning 80s games.
I'm just like, it's like, have you wasted your life, or are you wasting your life by not being a world champion at a board game? I'm not sure. Anyways, the AI system went undefeated in 5 games, witnessed by an editor from the journal Nature, and an arbitrator represented the British Go Federation. So one of the most exciting moments in my career, both as a researcher and an editor, the Nature editor, Dr. Tanguy Quag, said during a conference call with reporters on Tuesday. So I guess I need to stop the article here, because they're talking about how amazing it was that this AI has beat somebody at Go, because apparently Go can be an insanely complex game. And anybody who's ever programmed computers to find solutions to things will very quickly understand how these computers play games. They either have a database of movesets, so like the computers that play chess, when they play against people who don't know classic chess strategy, you know, people who just kind of play aggressively or randomly, the computer gets very confused because it's sitting there trying to match their movesets to known strategies, right? So they don't do very good against a human who's not playing in a predictable manner. But pretty much what the computer does is it'll examine all the situations, and then, you know, they'll have a formula, and it basically runs all the scenarios. So what this really is not that we have some miracle of programming. It's we've built computers powerful enough to do the computations needed to play a game like Go, which is apparently insanely complex, because it just works out, you know, all the possible moves. You know, maybe it does 20-some-odd moves out based on, you know, strategies of what it thinks its opponent's plan is based on previous moves, or maybe even randomly, and, you know, try to maximize points or whatever. And it's basically sitting there running all these scenarios and then picking the best move. They've simply made one powerful enough to actually reasonably play the game against somebody.
So they've made a computer that can play the most complex strategy game mankind has come up with.
Yes. But again, it's the same process. It's just examining all the possibilities and then picking the ones that are going to meet its algorithm for best move. It's not... I don't think this is a marvel of programming. I think this is a marvel of just, you know, megahertz. Just, we've got enough power behind the machine now to actually be able to do this.
It's not really any step closer to artificial intelligence. It's, I have 8 cores or 24 cores or how many cores the processor
has. Well, I mean, they even explain... They've at least Wired even explains this in the article. The challenge lies in the nature of the game. Even the most powerful supercomputers lack the processing power to analyze the results of every possible move in any reasonable amount of time. When Deep Blue toppled the world chess champion Garry Kasparov in 1997, it did so with what's called brute force. In essence, IBM's supercomputer analyzed the outcome of every possible move, looking further ahead than any human could. But apparently that's not possible with Go. In chess, at any given turn, there's an average of 35 possible moves. With Go, in which two players complete on polished stones on a 19-by-19 grid, there are 250. And each of those 250 is another 250, and so on. So, yeah. So what they've done is they use a technique called Monte Carlo tree search. Systems like Crazy Stone can look pretty far ahead. So, they combined brute force with a database. So it's actually not that terribly dissimilar from Rainbow Tables, where you do a whole bunch of work ahead of time and store it. So, you know,
and hope
Monte
like
Carlo
hell on a day you crack it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the point I'm making here is it's neat that they made a computer that can handle such a complex system, but I still think it shows more that we just have that much horsepower to throw at the problem now, as well as some improved data science, you know, with things like tables. So,
The only one I've really thought was interesting was the Jeopardy computer, and it's not as much that it knew the answers to things, because that's a database. Language. It's that it understood wordplay. There's a lot of Jeopardy questions, they're play on words. So yeah, it's the language concept of it that was really cool.
And it's always interesting to me that when you have these kind of things that the, you know, the tech reporters always seem to focus on the wrong part of the technology that's exciting. Like, oh, we've made a system that can play Go. No, you've made a system that can access a database and possibly pre-compute large sections of that database of complex models. That's much more useful than playing Go. Because you have a system that is potentially has, you know, could potentially say computate traffic patterns across of a city.
It could eventually get global warming right.
I don't know. They've yet to pull that off, but
they're getting a step closer. The computer can play Go.
I don't know. I don't think this is as amazing as people make it out to be. But I also live in that world, so maybe I'm missing something. I'm sitting there going, it's like you've got a hash table and a computer powerful enough to do the brute force moves. So
you're not missing anything. AI is nothing more than a mere input from man, and therefore a calculated based of, you know, data, whether it's database, whether it's formulas, whatever it is. It's an input, and it's basically, like you said, computating that information and spitting out an output. It's AI.
The breakthrough here is that they use some sort of a hash table to go with it to reduce the amount of computation that had to be done on the fly. And I agree with you. That's not, you know, classic movie AI. It's a very powerful algorithm and data set, which is very useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not, I'm going to talk to the computer or... What was the movie? Oh, fuck. The robot chick the guy built in a bunker. Like,
I know
tricked everyone, Machina. Killed him. Deus Ex Machina, that was it.
Yep.
Or Ex Machina. Deus Ex Machina is a game. it was Ex Machina, where the robot chick, you know, was actually AI to the point that she was able to deceive people. So, that's, you know, movie AI.
You couldn't even tell it using the Turing test.
Right. Yeah, this would never pass a Turing test because all it does is play Go. But it's a very powerful method of data set analysis. So, very useful. I'm not knocking their research. I just wish they'd quit calling it freaking AI. Oop. I guess Madman wasn't all that interested in what I was talking about.
Madman AI EXE has crashed.
The reason they call it AI, though, is because people are stupid and don't understand the difference.
Well, I mean, it's an algorithm. It's taking input, the board, and determining outcomes. It's not that different than high-end computer programs or data analysis. Madman, did you get fresh batteries in there?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So, I don't know. Anybody else have any thoughts on this before we move on?
I think you're spot on.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll move into any type of actual artificial intelligence before quantum computing gets cheap?
No. Because not because it's not possible, but because
resource intensive?
It is resource intensive because what you would do is you would model a brain using CPUs as neurons, and that is a extremely difficult task.
The biggest problem you've got, Morps, is how do you import sensor data?
Well,
If you look at the points that actually create a human mind, it's all about, you know, first off, you're tasting everything, you're touching everything, you're seeing everything, and as your sensory gets better and better at processing.
So you're close to where I was going with it. One of the main reasons you're not going to see it is, one, you could argue that, you know, artificial intelligence would be making judgment calls based on previous experience. Well, how do you provide previous experience to a computer program?
I mean, maybe if it gets to the point where we can actually digitally copy the neuron schematics of a human being and mesh overlay it or something on it.
No, I think it's going to be more you have to actually raise an AI, not terribly dissimilar from raising a child.
Oh, God.
I don't think you'll ever see a classic movie-style AI. Because, again, it's limited by the input of man.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but it's also because if we ever may have the technology to produce a classic movie-style AI, I doubt they will ever work that way. Because
right.
You know, a machine intelligence is not going to be comparable to our own in any way unless we force it to be.
And really, who wants their sex bot to shame them?
Well, you wouldn't really want to use that artificial intelligence in a sex bot, I think.
You want the one that responds to input and consults a database of appropriate gyration, not to.
How do you know, man? I might want my weekends to get really fucking weird.
Do you want to have a deep intellectual conversation with your?
Yes, I do.
With your for real doll.
I want my for
there's
real doll
dude,
to help
oh,
me work
there,
on my
there's
car.
There's a guy working on that. I had. Where did I see that article? The Real Doll company is actually working on putting robotics in the damn things.
Oh, yeah. You know? I linked the article or the news
is that
show
what,
on it
okay,
last
yeah,
week,
you showed
I think.
It to me. That's what it was. Okay. I mean, you want to talk about creepy.
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm going to intentionally not make it look exactly like a woman so it doesn't look so close like a woman that you're automatically turned off. I'm like, well, you're making creepy dolls that want me to fuck them. That's already... just fucking creepy.
That's for the man who has to close 50 tabs after a spank.
Yeah, if for real dolls are your thing, just go to a prostitute. They're cheaper and more realistic.
Well, I don't know. Some of those prostitutes are pretty out there looking.
No good with conversation, though. Never found one that's good with conversation.
They just need to attempt to enunciate while my balls are in their mouth.
I've yet to find a whore that can fix my transmission. I know they say hire a mechanic.
That's just the artificial intelligence part. Again, divorced from the sex robot. But my big thing with artificial intelligence, I don't think it can do any real major leaps in thought. And I know humans very rarely do that. There's been like maybe four of them. But still, it's something that we have done, so it's something I know we can do. Well, as a species, not as individuals.
I still feel like it's going to come back to this concept of experience. I suppose if you raised an AI once and had, you know, so it had experience, you could back up that disk somehow, so you could then clone lots of them. But
yeah,
then you're going
to
run into the problem.
To be an absolute cunt.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean,
and then here's something that we've been bashing Microsoft and Apple about, but their mass collection of their users—that's experience that you can feed into one of these.
Well, that's true, but it's a very limited experience, and. I don't know about you, but a lot of people abuse the virtual assistants in their phone.
I mean, don't
oh, yeah.
Wrong. This is
I do it all
if
the time.
Your child was raised by 4chan.
I mean, sure, when you have to tell Siri to do something for the fifth time, you get a little frustrated and say, "Listen, bitch." Before you realize you're talking to a, you know, algorithm, not an actual person.
I want to know how the hell to had a body.
Siri, how do I make meth?
Oh. No,
you need some hydrogen chloride. And you need some...
caustic soda.
Caustic Siri, soda. And some muriatic acid.
There's only three ingredients.
All right. That's right. Here's what I got.
It did a Google search of how to make meth.
And nice. Somebody's coming to your house tonight.
Not necessarily. I can talk my way out of that.
Is that your work phone, by the way?
Yes.
Nice.
They're not going to his house. They're going to the billing address.
Yeah.
Well, that'll make for an interesting conversation in the morning.
Wow. God, HR, call you first thing in the morning.
That would be funny.
Oh, next one up. This is actually from Gadgets 360, but it's, of course, all over the place. Oracle has officially announced they are depreciating the Java plugin for web browsers.
All right, how do you depreciate a program?
You claim you're not going to support or upgrade it anymore.
Okay. Like, depreciation is generally some form of actual wear and tear that lowers the value of something.
It's just like Windows depreciated, you know, Windows XP.
What that means is that there, it's so, like, let me, in software terms, if you say this feature is depreciated, that means I'm planning on removing it in future versions. So what they've said is we're still going to put it out for now, but on Oracle 9 or Oracle Java 9, we plan to scale it down, and in the future we're going to completely remove it. So what they're saying is Java applets should not be on websites anymore. Java should be, you know, server code and client code, not on in the web browser. And they're doing this primarily because they simply can't keep up with all the security fixes.
Yep.
Same thing with Flash. Flash has said HTML5 is a fine technology, and we don't want to maintain the plugin anymore. Or Adobe said they don't want to maintain the plugin anymore. So, and actually, I think Silverlight's done it too, which kind of sucks for
Netflix.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I know of that uses Silverlight, because I've had to reinstall the bitch about a dozen damn times.
One of the reasons I like using, I've got a couple of different set-top boxes that stream Netflix. I use that instead of my computer just so I don't have to install Silverlight.
Yep.
App on my tablet, too, for that matter. But, so Firefox has already said that they're going to disable it, and Chrome apparently is starting to as well. So Oracle is just saying, don't use it anymore. We'll quit. If the browsers are going to disable it, we're done with it. So in the long run, this is fantastic because it's one less thing to maintain. It's one less, just for a fun point, Java drive-by downloads have been pretty prevalent as far as malware and have been one of the most effective methods for actually getting viruses on Macs. So everyone who says Macs don't get viruses, guess what? They do, usually through Java. So the fact that Sun has decided they're no longer going to support it is probably a good move for Apple. But it also just makes sense. Why would you continue, you know, spending the support money on this when tablets don't support it? Most of your mobile stuff doesn't support it. And the only people who really are using it heavily are companies using legacy software.
That's where I see a problem with it.
See that. It's the same problem with XP being depreciated. You get a lot of people who are just going to keep using it no matter what. And not really much to do about it.
In the healthcare region that I'm in, you know, we are heavy Java. They're trying to move away from it, but God, just the infrastructure that's behind it, you know, the amount of money.
Well, not only that, but, you know, things like healthcare machines have to meet certain certification. So,
right.
You know, if this Java application is certified, they're going to want to keep using it for the next 10 years because it cost them so much to get the damn thing certified. So, I foresee issues, put it mildly.
Will it hurt Minecraft? Doesn't that run in Java?
It does, but that's a client. It kills the web browser plugin that used to have Minecraft as an app. I think they got rid of that. I think you have to download it now. The early version of it was an applet in a web browser. But, yeah, no, you download a little launcher and run it, and that's still going to work.
You showing your age, Morps?
Did I remember Minecraft being a plugin? It wasn't that long ago.
Yep.
Minecraft isn't that old.
Back in my day, Commodore 64s didn't have Java. At GeoWorks. Anyways, so I'm happy about that because it's just less crap to maintain. And this is kind of cool. Next story, this is from the Hindustan Times, of all places to get a story, right?
The way?
The Hindustan Times.
It's from India, the world's largest English-speaking country. They all speak Hindu.
Skype has now... who can do a really good Indian accent? Should let them read it. Skype has now received a much-needed update which hides your IP address by default. The move is aimed at protecting the privacy of Skype users, as earlier users could see each other's IP addresses. Starting with this update, IP addresses will be kept hidden from other Skype users. This measure will help prevent individuals from obtaining a Skype ID and resolving to an IP address, wrote Microsoft in a blog post. The new update is primarily addressed at gamers, given the booming popularity of online gaming space. In the past, vengeful gamers have managed to target other players' computers by taming their IP address. A Skype community user has also detailed step-by-step to help users protect their IPs from being targeted. So, this is, you know, the final gasp of the original Skype protocol. So you want to talk about showing our age. Skype used to be peer-to-peer technology.
I know, it was good
almost,
then.
There was almost no server involved. And, I mean, they had some coordination servers, but that was about it. And so you would, you know, your computer would literally directly connect from your machine to whoever you're calling. And nowadays, Skype works like pretty much any other instant messaging service out there, where I believe the VoIP calls are still computer-to-computer, but the messaging system goes through Microsoft servers. The VoIP calls are orchestrated through a Microsoft server system. I think I actually bitched about this on early decking stuff.
Oh, that yeah. That's one reason I think we moved away from Skype.
That's one reason. The other reason was call quality went to shit. So, but yeah, so Microsoft is actually actively hiding IP addresses, which... since they're running it as a managed service, it's no longer a peer-to-peer. See, if it was peer-to-peer, you couldn't hide IP addresses. Since they're finally running it as a managed service entirely now, it makes sense that they would hide that. Because then, you know, you have people doing live streams on YouTube and Twitch. You know, their Skype handle gets out, so somebody looks up their IP and DDoSes them or uses the IP to figure out, you know, what house they're in and, you know, calls in the SWAT. So, you know, it's... if you're going to run the service this way, it's a good move.
I'm just wondering, how often do you actually have the gamers from the opposite side on your Skype call?
No, it's not that. It's people that you're running with. People you're running with, like PvP, and like you massively screw up or something. And then they're pissed at you.
Or you're just live streaming and somebody happens to see your Skype, you know, window come across because you're live streaming your games, right? And, you know, that's for some reason a common pastime is to SWAT, you know, call the cops on people who are live streaming games just so you see on camera somebody get arrested. And having an IP address makes that... But not only that, if a lot of people use the same handle or same screen name across multiple services, so if somebody uses the same name for Skype and Xbox, because Skype being a Microsoft property, now it wants you to sign in with your Microsoft identity, and if you try to sign in with your old Skype account, it hems and haws and bitches about it to finally let you in. But you know, if you're using the same identity across Xbox and Skype, you're playing against somebody online, and you know you don't like them. Oh, you just check their identity. Just check your screen name. Oh, there's their Skype account. Is that their IP address? Sure is. Let me just plug that into low orbit ion cannon, or go on 4chan and say, hey, look, it's a pedophile. Everybody go attack this IP address. You know.
Nice.
Because people do it.
Yep.
And then the guy you're losing Halo to gets suddenly kicked off the internet for some strange reason. People are vindictive little shits.
Why did 4 million people try to handshake your computer at the same time?
Yeah, basically. Or, post it up saying, hey, guys, I've, post the poor guy's IP address and say, I've built the ultimate unhackable router. I mean, there's all kinds of stupid shit you can do once you get your hands on somebody's IP address.
As
especially
my
since
list
most
of
home
things
routers
to do
tonight. Most home routers are crap, so.
What's your IP there, Morps?
That would be 127.0.0.1. You go right ahead.
Let me DDoS that.
Yeah, you go right ahead. You will never get through my unhackable IP address of 127.0.0.1. I suppose I could have been a real dick and given you the 192 address, huh?
Even better.
So, all right, let's see. Next story up. It's from Motherboard. It's a Vice story. I need my my Vice
need your Vice disclaimer.
I need the Vice disclaimer. I gotta load that up. Hang on. That's not the Vice disclaimer. Where's the Vice disclaimer?
I have no idea. I'm not running soundboard.
Truth bomb alert.
Zionist Vice. Here it is. Here it is.
The Zionist media-controlled Vice News.
So now that we've had the bumper for a Vice story, Google will soon shame all websites that are unencrypted.
That's intelligent.
Google wants everything on the web to be traveling over a secure channel. That's why in the future, your Chrome browser will flag unencrypted websites as insecure and displaying a red X over the padlock in the URL bar. With this upcoming change in Chrome, Google makes it clear that the web of the future should be encrypted and all sites should be served over HTTPS, which is a secure layer on top of the usual HTTP web protocol. Why not just go ahead and move everyone over to HTTP2, where it's it doesn't have to go over SSL, but the protocol is set up to work that way. Several companies and organizations have been pushing for more encrypted sites as part of a campaign to encrypt all the things, because naming things after a meme, which consists of promoting more websites to abandon the traditional less secure HTTP protocol and adopt HTTPS. Currently, Chrome displays only an icon of a white page when you visit the website you're accessing, which is not secured with HTTPS, a green padlock when it is, as well as a padlock with a red X when there's something wrong with the HTTPS page you're trying to access. It'll draw even more attention to websites that are potentially insecure. You know, honestly, as goofy as it sounds, I'm okay with this. I don't know about the red X, but calling out that a website is not encrypted, fine. Keeps you from accidentally punching in, passwords or something. So, I don't know that a red X is correct. Maybe just a little icon up there that meant that says unencrypted as opposed to broken. Because I can see what's going to happen is if you run a website, you're going to have people saying, "I go in Chrome and it says something's wrong with your website. There's a big red X on it." It's like, no. It's just a personal blog. There's no reason to encrypt this. So, if it just
I don't see why they're changing their pre-existing setup, because it already shows whether it's unencrypted. It just doesn't have the lock on it.
Well, people aren't looking. That's the problem.
Putting the red X on there is going to make them look. The website's working when I click on this shit on it, right?
Yeah, it's going to put a red X on there, which means you're going to have people say, well, something's wrong with it. It shows a red X. Something must be broken, as opposed to it just working. I've worked on help desk. I know how this shit goes. So,
I'm just thinking it's going to be the new Yes box. You just click it and get through it.
Well, that's largely the case with HTTPS, and you'll see a lot of people doing self-signed certs with that kind of crap, which is worse. Let's see. Parisa Talbriz, who manages Google's security engineering team, tweeted that Google's intention is to call out HTTPS for what it is, unsafe. No. HTTP is not unsafe. HTTP is in the clear. HTTP is like, you know, writing it on the back of a postcard, sending it through the mail. You may not care that anybody and their brother can read your note to whoever you sent the postcard to. That is such a dated reference. God.
They still actually have postcards, though.
I grew up in the 80s. I'm sorry.
It hasn't gone the way of the speaker at a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
Or the floppy disk.
So if you're just reading a blog or a news website or, you know, anything that it's just informational, you're just reading, that's fine. If you're logging into the website, punching in passwords, or possibly buying something, then absolutely yes, this unencrypted. So if it was me, I would set up the browser such that if you submit any information back to a website beyond just simply requesting things, then have it call out unsafe. So like if you fill out a form like to log in and it doesn't have HTTPS, then yeah, absolutely pop up and say, hey, you're logging into an unsecured website. This is unsafe, because that would be. Your password would be going out in the clear, and anybody running something like, say, FireSheep wouldn't do it, but NetworkMiner will pick it up. On, like, say, a Wi-Fi network? Yeah, they just got your password. Whereas, you know, if I'm running NetworkMiner and you're browsing the web, I see what web page you look at. Well, whoop-de-doo, I could walk behind your screen and do that. Unless you're looking at something that you would be embarrassed to look at, and in that case, set up a more secure network and possibly don't do it at Starbucks. Or McDonald's, as the case may be.
I mean, that's where everybody wants to look at the most weird things you can find on the internet, right?
I there's a fantastic picture that floats around on the Music Battle Station subreddit of somebody who set up this huge monitor and workstation in a Starbucks. So, I don't know. Maybe that's a thing. But I kind of hate the whole, oh my god, it's unencrypted, it's unsafe. Because that's not true. If you're sending data back, it's untrue. But if you're just reading, and you don't care about other people seeing what you're reading, then I don't know. I don't like the Red X. I wish they called it out some other way. I don't know what that other way would be. I just know that trying to call out HTTP as unsafe is an exaggeration. It is situationally unsafe. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If you don't care if people see what you're doing, it doesn't matter. Right. I don't care that you see me reading about the presidential candidates. Everyone should be doing that before you cast your vote.
It's like, yeah, but, you know, you do nothing but spend all your time reading about the rent is too damn high party.
Hey, have you heard that guy's platform?
Rent is too damn high.
He's a one-issue candidate, but sometimes you just need a one-issue candidate to fix that damn rent.
I thought Trump was a one-issue candidate, but he's gone beyond that. So, next story up.
Has he addressed rent yet? I haven't heard him say it's too damn high.
I would love to hear Donald Trump say that, considering he's a real estate mogul.
He did post on Hillary Clinton's Twitter account to shut the fuck up.
Well, I think a lot of people want to say that to Hillary Clinton. So, his next article is from Ars Technica. And
things.
So, they've changed the headline on this, because the URL says the headline is How to Search the Internet of Things for Photos of Sleeping Babies. And they've changed it to the Internet of Things. It's hilariously broken and getting worse. And so, obviously, they're going to attack Shodan, not one of the actual search engines set up to look at IP cameras. Shodan, a search engine for the Internet of Things, recently launched a new section that lets users easily browse vulnerable webcams. Shodan is not a search engine for the Internet of Things. Shodan is a search engine for in-map results. So, I guess I should explain that a little bit. Shodan doesn't scan the internet for content. Shodan scans the internet for what your server is running and what it is. So, if you have Shodan credits, you go in there and search Shodan for Telnet servers, or Telnet servers in China, or Telnet servers in China running this specific version of Linux, or even down to with this specific banner text. You know, maybe the one you happen to have an exploit to. Shodan is fantastic if you run a network or a website for checking it every once in a while and seeing if shit that you don't expect shows up. It's like, huh, yeah, so there's a Raspberry Pi running a web server off our IP space. What the fuck, Bill? You know, then you go over to Bill's desk and proceed to beat the crap out of him. But,
TeamSpeak server somewhere.
So, but that's kind of what Shodan is. It is, it's basically a search engine for in-map results. But okay, apparently it's, according to Ars Technica, it's a search engine for the Internet of Things, and they do have a section for vulnerable webcams. That probably means somebody just put together a nice little predefined search terms for commonly vulnerable webcams. Anyways, the feed includes images of marijuana plantations, backroom banks, children, kitchens, living rooms, garages, front gardens, back gardens, ski slopes, swimming pools, colleges, and schools, laboratories, cash register cameras, and retail stores. According to Dan Tintler, a security researcher who has spent several years investigating webcam security. That's not what he...
Can't you just do this from Google? Are you? Can't you just do this from Google?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Google will ask you if you're a robot after a while and get you to verify that you're human. Most of it can be done in Google if you get your search terms right.
It's all over the place, he told Ars Technica UK. Practically everything you can think of. So I guess to clarify, there are a whole bunch of IP cameras out there that people put on public IP space that don't have a password on them.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't say the website I know, but I'll share it with everyone in PS.
Cool. The cameras are vulnerable because they use the real-time streaming protocol, RTSP, port 554, to share the video but have no password authentication in place. The image feed is available to paid Shodan members at images.shodan.io. Okay, so Shodan apparently really did add a section for webcams. Free Shodan accounts can also search the filter. Oh, they pre-wrote the filter for you. Port 554 has screenshot equals true. Shodan crawls the internet at random looking for IP addresses with open ports. If the ports lack authentication and streams a video feed, the new script takes a snap and then moves on. While the privacy implications are obvious, Shodan's new image feed also highlights the pathetic state of Internet of Things security. So, blah, 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 curse of the minimum viable product, companies don't give a shit about security, they don't understand it, end of the Pentagon, will these efforts stop hackers? The answer is no. Okay. So, the truth is that most of these IP cameras should not be on public IP space.
And it's not hacking if you don't need to bypass any security to get into it. If I put a webcam in my room and just blast it out to the internet, you're not hacking when you access it.
No, you're intruding.
Are you hacking if somebody in a car near you is using one of those FM transmitters because they don't have a line in on their stereo, and you drive close enough to listen in on it, is that hacking?
No, that's your radio's picking it up.
So, but you have to tune to it.
And what if they set it to, I don't know, 98.1, and that happens to be a radio station I listen to all the time, and I pull up next to them?
Yeah, but the cameras, it's not as cool as everyone thinks. Everyone thinks it's like hacking, like
no,
in the movies.
It's boring
all cool
as hell.
Man, me and Big sat there for 5 hours one night watching what we thought was a cocaine-fueled hooker party in a karaoke room. 4 hours later, turns out to be a fucking funeral. It was a wake for some old bastard. We thought
that
this guy
like
was
an amazing funeral.
Dude, we thought this guy was doing fucking lines of blow off the table. No, it turns out he was just sobbing so hard that his head kept hitting the table.
I know what's happening.
All the hot prostitutes we thought were there were just sisters and daughters and shit, man. It was the biggest letdown ever.
So what lawyer do you contact to write out a will that states in your funeral you want hookers, blow, and gummy bears, and really good bourbon?
Gummy bears shot out of a water cannon onto a model's ass in slow motion.
Yes, yes.
That's where you're going with
that, Morps.
In slow
motion, yes. We want this. But, I don't care how you make something in reality go in slow motion. We want it in slow motion.
It's funny, the camera that we got into was taken down the next day. It's offline.
A lot of times, if somebody gets into one of these cameras and they're really obnoxious about it, whoever's running them will notice that the camera moves on its own and do something about it.
But yeah.
Again, it comes down to these cameras just simply should not be on public IP space. They should be behind a firewall of some sort. And it's like, oh no, but I need to be able to see the camera at the office from home, or the reverse. I need to be able to see what's going on at home from work. They're called VPNs. Look into it.
My giraffe enclosure camera, that got taken down for a while and password protected, but then I think it was about 4 or 5 months later they took the password back off.
Yeah, somebody complained.
So I can still go in and scare the shit out of the giraffes at midnight. It's great.
Yell down the microphone at it or something? That would be amazing.
Dude, you just move the camera. They're skittish enough as it is, and they don't care about their young.
Well, I mean, I know like IP baby monitors people will get into and, you know, yell at people and say horrible things.
There was a guy broadcasting a couple weeks ago. He's not real good at it, and I think he is rather young, but he will play like horror sounds through the camera. So like screaming at 2 a.m. If you're going to check your camera in the middle of the night, please put clothes on. You never know how many people are watching the live stream. Just saying.
Well, I'm just thinking playing horror sounds. Yeah, that's not so good. But I think you could have a lot more fun with that with like the soundtracks to certain movies, or you know, YouTube rants, or social justice warrior screeds just start coming out of the radio at 3 a.m. I mean,
no. Feminist scream singing.
Oh, God. That's terrorism. There's a prank, and then there's borderline terrorism.
Like, that comes out of your child monitor at 2 a.m. You're hiding under the bed and looking for the shotgun. I mean, it's just like...
That comes out of your child monitor at 2 a.m. You're taking it back to wherever you purchased it from.
So, next story is from Time.com. Wendy's customers should start worrying right now.
Just if you get a Wendy's alone, you should worry.
The chain is investigating possible fraudulent charges to customers' credit and debit cards. They say fast food isn't good for you, but if you made a recent trip to Wendy's, your blood pressure could be going up for an entirely different reason. Cybersecurity expert Brian Krebs reported on his blog Wednesday that the burger chain was looking into claims of unusual activity on customers' credit or debit cards in some locations. Fraudulent charges may have occurred elsewhere after the cards were legitimately used at some of our restaurants, Wendy's spokesman Bob Bertilli told Krebs. There's no word yet on how big this potential breach might be, how many stores are affected, and how long till customers' information may have been compromised. Krebs said he heard from his financial security sources in both the Midwest and the East Coast that the U.S. bad activities that raised possible flags of cyber theft. So if you've used a credit or debit card at Wendy's over the last several weeks, it's a good idea to keep an eye on your account.
Now, it sucks that happened, but if Wendy's is coming out on their own to say this, I'm going to have to say kudos for openness.
They're not. Krebs called them on it.
Oh, well then, yeah, fuck them.
So here's the thing. Wendy's is largely franchised, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know that if you have a handful of them that got hacked, if all of them have been hacked or not.
probably find it's just a couple of... It's probably not even related. They've just found a couple of people with credit card skimming. Like, that work behind the counter. It's probably unrelated. That's
very possible.
Yeah.
That, or you've got a handful of stores that have gotten popped. But I don't know that they would all connect back to, like, the corporate network, like, the same way, like, a Target would.
I think the ordering system would, wouldn't it?
No.
Sales system would.
They don't do just-in-time inventory. They have someone that actually does their ordering.
Yeah, so I don't know that their cash register systems would necessarily be all hooked up to a corporate network the same way, you know, like a big box store would. I think because they're franchised, there'd be a layer of separation there.
Yeah, with a franchise, what you do, what you're paying for is the right to use the name. You have to have a certain look in your restaurants, and then you get to use their menu items. But other than that, a franchise is almost an entirely separate business from anything else. That's why a lot of franchisees, if they get kicked out of the franchise, they just change the name of the restaurant.
So, let's see. I had an Apple story from the Daily Dot, but I think I'm going to shit can it.
On Wendy's, could you really blame corporate if one of their franchises got popped?
I don't think you could, because I think they're separate companies.
And I guess corporations that do franchises like this might start saying, you have to have a certain level of security to be one of our franchises now.
Well, that's the theory that comes out with cybersecurity fraud as well, is the idea is that if you're going to get, or not fraud, insurance, I'm sorry, the insurance companies are going to start, because there already are, you know, IT security insurance policies. And to meet the requirements of these plans, they could start implementing requirements on security settings. So I could see that, you know, this being similar, just having the franchise say, no, look, you got to have your shit up to snuff, right?
Does the data have to flow through a router? Can I take a drill to a router and run my USB cord through it?
You butchered that joke so badly, Madman.
Blowing through it.
Okay. The joke is that PCI compliance requires your data go through a firewall. The joke was you drill a hole through a firewall and run an Ethernet cord through it, therefore your data is flowing through a firewall. Anyways. Next story up is from HuluMagazine.com. Yeah, we can play that. I can find my stupid soundboard window. I got away from using the soundboard so damn much because everybody thought it was obnoxious.
No, 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 Sard!
Is a faggot. Is that a big enough shout out, Sard?
That link that you just posted is Wendy's again.
It is? It is. So, wait. That's the current link. I hadn't posted anything yet.
Oh, okay. Brewing I just me, heard a ding.
Brewing with me. So, Australian scientists are ready to begin trials of a new, fully implantable bionic eye. And they actually have a picture of RU right there on the cover.
Why, how emu I look.
Is it venomous? From Australia, it should be venomous.
It is expected that this bionic eye will not only improve the vision of the patient, but will also be better than the current vision restoration devices. Phoenix 99, at least they got somebody to name it properly, developed by a team of scientists at the University of South Wales, is a fully implantable eye, which has the world's first neural stimulation technology. It has already been tested and demonstrated successfully by a team of surgical experts in preclinical work. This device received a massive funding boost, which helped the scientists take their work to the next level, human implantation. Greg Sawning, one of the co-inventors, said that they are really excited as the first trial was very successful and it proved their technology works. We are really excited by the first trial because it proved the technology and implantation technique works. Patients will learn to use the technology in the same way a person implanted with a cochlear ear implant learns to hear the electrical impulse, said Greg Sawning. The scientists at the university have been working on it since 1997 with the aim to restore sight to people affected by retinitis pigmentosa. I may have said that right. One of the leading causes of blindness in younger people. There are 2 million people around the world that are affected by this disease. It is a degenerative condition which can be found in patients in their 30s. Gradually, it can lead to complete blindness in about 10 years. The degeneration, blah, 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 can be slowed down. Modern ways of restoring sight to people affected with it is via bionic vision. In 2012, a team tied with some partially implanted prototype devices in 3 patients. Devices made of 24 electrode array, blah, 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 blah. The new Phoenix 99, ready for trials, is fully implantable in contrast to its predecessor devices. So you're not wearing glasses or anything. This thing actually goes in the eye. Let's see. Wants to implant it in 12 patients over the next 2 years. So anyways, the user also wears glasses equipped with a special camera. The camera captures the images, which define the stimulation of nerve cells in the patient's retina. Ah, damn, so you still need the glasses. I misread it earlier. Scientists claim that his potential to restore vision to millions around the world. So anyways, what they're doing is they're directly stimulating the ocular nerve via an implant in the eye. Oh, I know why I got confused. There was another article I saw about an implantable eye that had nothing to do with helping you see better. It was just a camera. But it fit fully in the eye and was, like, hidden.
Didn't the guy have one implanted on the back of his head?
Yeah, something like that. But, still, this is a cool story. So they're directly stimulating the ocular nerve so that people who have a specific type of sight loss can see again through a camera. That's badass.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how close to the images you've already seen is this camera feed?
Well, they're comparing it to a cochlear implant, so it's probably not going to be anything like real sight, but...
Better than darkness.
Better than nothing.
So you might get shapes and black and white vision, or shapes
well,
and possibly
that's
some color.
They've already managed shapes in black and you know very very distinct black and white vision where you can see like bright lights and shit like that. But so if this is better than that, I'm hoping that's maybe grayscale.
I wonder, could you read a book? Well, it's people.
Probably if it's extremely large print.
Okay. Because
you have to get a contrast, right? So, but still, they're directly stimulating the ocular nerve. That's awesome. I love that. I'm all about the point where we get Ghost in the Shell prosthetic bodies. So. Next step towards that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So. Now, when they put your brain in the box, might be able to let you see.
What's in the box?
Box, Dave. No, you weren't talking about the box body.
Alright, so the only thing I really have for Digital Dojo tonight, Tails 2.0 came out. They completely redesigned it. They got rid of the fake XP mode, which was hilarious if you watch the conversations on Reddit. Because apparently people were like, but what about the people who are using Tails and risking their lives every minute they're running a non-Windows operating system? They shouldn't be using a laptop. It's just, like, if you're going to get shot for using the wrong operating system, just don't. You know, there are limits. But
who's going to shoot you for the wrong operating system?
Apparently in certain countries, if... you're using the wrong desktop, they'll assume you're using some kind of encrypted system and shoot you for sedition. I think their example was China, but it was Reddit comments, so it's hard to say. I don't think it's real. Pretty much, Tails 2.0 is a complete rework. They brought it up to date based on Debian 8, and it's actually using GNOME Shell, so it's GNOME 3 is the desktop environment now. Other than that, they just brought all their applications up to date. They brought Tor Browser up to 5.5. They're working on adding the Windows Camouflage back, but it's currently broken. And they switched over to Systemd. And they're saying because it's actually got better security. And it does have the sandboxing, so maybe? But apparently they've also really replaced a bunch of the custom scripts and cleaned up the distro quite a bit. So I haven't played very much with it yet, but it looks promising.
Cool.
But anyways, like I said, shorter show tonight. That's all I've really got. No comments on Tails?
No, shouldn't have been in the Sonic game to start with.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I starred.